Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. This is Pardes from Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, B'Shalach. This week would be a great time for you to rate the podcast, either on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from. Rating the podcast doesn't take long, but does make a big difference. Thank you very much for your time on this. This week, Yiska Smith discusses B'Shalach. Yiska Smith is an adjunct faculty member at Pardes. And now, Yiska Smith.
Parshat B'Shalach, the pillar of fire that provides light and clarity in those moments of darkness and suffering. Cultivating the spiritual practice of seeing light in the darkness, in the pain, and in the suffering. Based on a teaching by Rabbi Kolonimus Kalmish Shapiro, the Pious Etzner Rebbe, from his classic Eish Kodesh, delivered in the Warsaw Ghetto on the 20th of January, 1940. Before I share with you the Pious Etzner's teaching, though, I ask you, is it the darkness itself that we all experience at times that frightens us, leaving us unsure of when and where to take the next step, and confused by the lack of a well-lit, clear path? Or is it the pain and suffering inherent in the darkness that we endure along our life journeys that we tend to dread? Or is it perhaps the challenge to hold on to and to sustain our belief, our faith, and trust in God during these trying times that causes us the most despair? I suggest that all of these are organically intertwined with each other. Each of these contains and is contained in each other. I ask you further, when we are in the midst of darkness and the ensuing confusion and suffering in our lives, isn't what so many of us desire and actually need is to acquire the means and spiritual practice to experience this in a less severe and bitter way, in a less disconnecting and lonely way? The Pious Etzner Rebbe provides us with an inspiring insight that guides us along the unclear map when encountering darkness and suffering in our lives. Yes, it hurts. It can hurt terribly. Yes, it does not feel good. And yes, it can paralyze us and significantly threaten, or at the very least compromise, the sustainability and integrity of our belief system. How are we encouraged, though, to move through this space and simultaneously remain faithful to the experience and to our true, authentic inner selves? I want to caution you that this is not the absolute cure-all prescription for enduring suffering and darkness. Actually, I believe there is no single teaching in our tradition that resonates with everyone at all times. Perhaps, though, some of you will feel more resourced when experiencing those moments of difficulty in your lives. For those with whom this teaching does not resonate, consider it the efforts of a compassionate and loving spiritual shepherd to provide comfort to his flock. When the Pious Etzner taught this, he himself was thrust into trauma and pain, beyond what any one of us can imagine. Coupled with his own sense of dismay, he felt called upon to provide some type of guidance for his followers in the Warsaw Ghetto. I urge you to please view this as one way that one person, albeit a spiritual giant, suggests we live through the most difficult and dark moments in our life journeys. And while he carefully refrains from dogmatically insisting how one should respond, because no individual is spared these times, his teaching may in fact be of relevant value to you. The Pious Etzner's teaching is based on two verses in our Parsha, actually in the very beginning, in Shemot, in Exodus, Perek Yud Gimel, Chaf Aleph v'Chaf Bet, chapter 13, verses 21 and 22. First in Hebrew. V'Hashem holech lifnehem. Yomam ba'amud anan lanchotam haderech. V'layla ba'amud eish la'ir lehem. Lalechet yomam v'layla. Lo yamish amud he'anan yomam v'amud ha'eish layla. Lifnei ha'am. And God goes before them, by day in a pillar of cloud to guide them along the way, and by night in a pillar of fire, providing them with light, so that they could travel day and night. He did not remove the pillar of cloud by day, nor the pillar of fire at night from the people. Based on the translation from the original Hebrew by J. Hershey Wirth. Until this verse, all the preceding text is stated in the past tense, as in verse 17, when Paro sent out Bishalach. In verse 19, Moshe took Yosef's remains with him, Vayikach. And then in verse 20, they traveled on from Sukkot, Vayis'u, and encamped in Etam, Vayachanu. But this verse, V'Hashem holech, and God goes before them, is the first time in this section in which the text speaks in the present tense. The P.S. Esna continues, we learn in the Midrash in Bereshit Rabbah, Genesis Rabbah 51:2, that the phrase, and God, V'Hashem, always connotes God and his court of law, who uveit dino. And so we ask, what aspect of judgment was hinted at in the verse? And God goes before them, V'Hashem holech lifnehem. Now the fire in the Amud HaEsh, this fire, connotes judgment. However, it was for the Jewish people's own good, as we see, since it lit up the darkness for them. What then is so judgmental about the text, connoting God and his court of law? Beit Dino. Rashi explains that the verse, and these are the laws that you must set before them, which is in a later parsha, in Parshat Mishpatim, Shmot Chaf Aleph Aleph, Exodus chapter 21:1, in Hebrew, Ve'ela HaMishpatim Asher Tasim Lifnehem, means that the laws should be set out like a table laid before them, lifnehem, so that each individual should find the Torah arranged plainly and clearly for him, her, according to each one's capacity to understand. Now, I would like to bring to your attention the force of the word lifnehem, before them. This word is connected to panim, which means face, which then connects to bifnim, which means inside, within, which then connects to panimiyut, inwardness, the state of internalness, within. Hence, the movement from before them, outside of them, it implies, outside of the person, before the person, to the state of inwardness, to within the person, internal. The P.S. Etzner continues, this is also what is meant by the words in our text, and God goes before them, lifnehem. God and his court of law are lifnehem, before them, really meaning within them. Those were my words. Adjusting and setting the judgments according to the particular needs of each individual Jew. This is why the fire, i.e. the judgment, is plainly and clearly beneficial, lighting the darkness for each person. Each expression of judgment is in fact for each one's benefit, as it illuminates the darkness within each individual's experience. So much so that we must use the judgments and suffering that we endure properly. What does that mean? What does that mean? Meaning, he says, the Rebbe says, to utilize them to somehow dafka strengthen our connection and relationship with God, to keep going day and night. Lalechet yomam v'layla, it says in the Pasuk. Lalechet, to always go. We learn this from that part of the text that speaks in the present tense and refers to the necessity for the Jewish people to keep going day and night. Lalechet yom v'layla. Furthermore, from what we have already said, the deeper implication becomes apparent and clearer. Not only when the going is revealed to be good and easy must we go in God's ways, climbing higher and higher spiritual heights, but also when, God forbid, we are in pain and darkness. For when a person enjoys good fortune, shetov lanu, he writes, it is easy for him to be in relationship with God joyously, passionately, and with love. Nevertheless, when he is suffering, God forbid, he must somehow take advantage of that situation also. To be with God, with his broken heart, hu b'tzara yishamesh b'matzavo zeh. To take advantage of that situation also, to be with God with his broken heart and with an outpouring of the soul. We learn in the Talmud in Masechet Brachot, Gimel Aleph, page 3, side A, in Tractate Brachot, when Rabbi Yossi entered one of the ruined houses of Yerushalayim to pray, he heard a bat kol, a heavenly echo. In the same Talmudic passage, we learn that Rabbi Yossi was told by Eliyahu Navi, by the prophet Elijah, that the heavenly voice, the bat kol, speaks not only in the ruins, but whenever Jewish people go into synagogues anywhere in order to pray. Why then did Rabbi Yossi not hear this echo when praying in his own synagogue? And by extension, I ask, of us, we for that matter. So the Priyasestna concludes this section by saying, we do not presume to understand the essence of Rabbi Yossi's experience, but the lesson in it for us is this. It was precisely because Rabbi Yossi was praying amidst the ruins of Yerushalayim, because his heart was broken, nishbalibo, in response to the destruction, the chorban around him, that he was able to hear the heavenly voice. So the Piyasetna concludes by saying the following. And so it must be with us. You know, I have to say, if he weren't in the middle of all this, it would be hard to believe he would say the following. But because he was there experiencing this. And he believes, he says, so it must be with us when our reality may indeed be very sad and bitter. Let us not waste the time. Lo nevatal hazman, or the opportunity. For example, let us recite Tehillim, let us learn Torah, and pray. Let us keep going day and night. Lalechet yomam v'layla. And God, who is merciful, will have mercy and will turn the judgments around so that they become entirely beneficial, going before them. V'Hashem Hashem holech lifnehem, to meet each individual need. Surely, so much to consider, so much to ponder on and to contemplate. Each individual, according to one's own personal experiences, values, and sense of true inner self. Alongside the above teaching, I would like to share, though, some thoughts from Viktor Frankl in Man's Search for Meaning. Two very different individuals indeed. While they both experienced similar darkness and unimaginable suffering during the Shoah, the Holocaust, their positions in their respective communities and their relationships with God, the Torah, and Jewish tradition differed in no small way. And yet, I cannot but help see similarities in their wisdom. Actually, it is jarring and somewhat eerie how aligned some of their conclusions are with each other. Viktor Frankl's experience in Auschwitz actually confirmed one of his key ideas. Quote, he writes, life is not primarily a quest for pleasure or a quest for power, but a quest for meaning. Suffering in and of itself is meaningless. We give our suffering meaning by the way in which we respond to it. What was needed in the face of such horrific suffering that he endured and witnessed was, quote, a fundamental change, a shift in our attitude toward life. We had to learn ourselves, and furthermore, we had to teach despairing men that it did not really matter what we expected from life, but rather what life expected from us. We needed to think of ourselves as those who were being questioned by life daily and hourly. Life ultimately means taking responsibility to find the right answer to its problems and to fulfill the tasks which it constantly sets for each individual. Lifnehem, lifnehem. This sentiment mamash echoes that of the Piasetzna's teaching. This is not merely coincidental or casual. It's outright remarkable. He writes elsewhere, quote, "But let me make it perfectly clear that in no way is suffering necessary to find meaning. I only insist that meaning is possible even when there is suffering, provided certainly that the suffering is unavoidable." Bearing his soul in the most profound and vulnerable way possible, Viktor Frankl writes, "Let me recall that which was perhaps the deepest experience I had in the concentration camp. The odds of surviving the camp were no more than 1 in 28, as can easily be verified by exact statistics. It did not even seem possible, let alone probable, that in the manuscript of my first book, my life's work, which I had hidden in my coat when I arrived at Auschwitz, would ever be rescued. Thus, I had to undergo and to overcome the loss of my mental child. And now it seemed as if nothing and no one would survive me, neither a physical nor a mental child of my own. So I found myself confronted with the question whether under such circumstances my life was ultimately void of any meaning. Not yet did I notice that an answer to this question with which I was wrestling so passionately was already in store for me, and that soon thereafter this answer would be given to me." Chevra, listen now. This is so incredible. "This was the case when I had to surrender my clothes and in turn inherited the worn-out rags of an inmate who had already been sent to the gas chamber immediately after his arrival at the Auschwitz railway station. Instead of the many pages of my manuscript, I found in a pocket of the newly acquired coat one single page torn out of a Hebrew prayer book, containing the most important Jewish prayer, Shema Yisrael." Viktor Frankl concludes, "How should I have interpreted such a coincidence," in quotes, "other than as a challenge to live my thoughts instead of merely putting them on paper?" Returning to Al Parsha, in this same chapter, Perek Yud Gimel, chapter 13 in Shemot, in verse 18, three verses before the one the Piasetzna based his teaching on, we read, "V'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim." The children of Israel went up from the land of Egypt armed. The Hebrew word in the verse for armed is chamushim. Rashi explains that according to the Midrash, Rabbi Nahorai teaches in the Milchilta de Rabbi Yishmael that the word chamushim derives from chamishi, a fifth, and he argues that only one-fifth of the Jews left Egypt. The rest, the four-fifths, perished and were buried during the plague of darkness when the Egyptians were unable to witness this traumatic event. But why did 80%, four-fifths, an overwhelming majority of the Jewish nation perish? Based on my understanding, if I may share that understanding of the Midrash, regretfully, when it comes down to those final moments before the plague, when it came down to those final moments before the plague of the slain of the firstborn and the imminent redemption from slavery to freedom, most of the children of Israel were unable to muster up the faith and the trust in God required of them to leave Egypt and to go into the unknown future. As bitter and painful as the slave experience was, it was familiar. And in the struggle for survival and self-preservation, they sadly chose to remain enslaved in Egypt rather than to break free. At that point, they spiritually died, manifesting in their physical lives expiring. However, out of respect to their dignity and honor, God did not want the Egyptians to witness this calamity, the death of the majority of the children of Israel who chose enslavement over freedom, and the minority of survivors having to bury their own people. Hence, the ninth plague, the plague of darkness. The opportunity to become free required remaining brave, demonstrating courage, and with dignity and unselfishness, believing in the God-given power of seeing the light in the midst of darkness. Indeed, this is incredibly difficult spiritual work. And if I may add, humbling, when we ponder on the fact that the Jewish people today, those of us listening to this very podcast, are the descendants of those minority who survived the enslavement in Egypt, who did not perish, and who believed their lives were meaningful in the darkest of nights. We, in fact, are the descendants of the first generation of Bnei Israel who saw the pillar of fire, that Amud Esh that provided light and clarity in those moments of darkness and suffering. May I suggest that perhaps, even before the Torah actually records this physical phenomena in our parsha, this timeless bedrock and source of faith and trust, our ancestors who came out of Egypt, from whom we descend, were able to spiritually see their own pillar of fire, their own Amud Ha'esh, from within, from Lifnehem to Penimiyut, illuminating their own personal light, each according to his, her own unique, authentic experience. With God's presence, compassion, and guidance, may we be zochim, we may merit to do the same. Shabbat shalom u'mevorach.
Thank you, Yiska. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.